Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elts, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
So it's the off season, and you know, before we light the hot stove or anything like that, you know, people start to turn their eyes to baseball books, baseball movies, and it's the perfect time. Brian, you recommended a documentary that you'd seen, I guess, on Crave.
Yeah, but it is in a lot of places. I remember I watched it on Crave, but then I stumbled across it in like 3 or 4 other places. So I don't think it's exclusive. It is out in a large variety of places. The Willie Mays documentary, Say Hey, which I really, really recommend people watch. It's really good.
Yeah, so you messaged me about it, and I did. I mean, obviously, we took a week off last week because I was sick and could barely talk, or at least talk without coughing. So one thing I did manage to do, though, during that time off was watch this documentary, and really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, neither of us really like grew up watching Willie Mays. You know, this is someone whose career kind of before our time. I had seen a little bit of footage of him. There's a HBO like 2-part documentary called like When It Was a Game. Which I'm not sure if you've seen that documentary.
I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it and seen clips from it.
Yeah, and so that, I mean, kind of like, I think is considered like the like silver era of baseball. And they had colorized like a lot of like 50s and 60s footage that hadn't been colorized previously, or at least it had only been available in black and white. And it was interesting to see some of the like gameplay rather than, you know, hear calls and stuff like that. So like the basket catch, which Willie Mays became well known for, that's where I first saw it, was on that doc. But really kind of learning about the like genesis of that catch in this Say Hey Willie Mays doc that is out now was really interesting.
Yeah, not only that, but like all the different little things about him. I, you know, obviously we're both baseball historians, but due to just like a lack of material available on the matter, like I knew next to nothing about his Negro League career. And so learning more about that, learning specifically about, you know, his impact on the culture and community in Harlem around that time was a very interesting, was news to me. This was not something I had known about it. And these are the types of things that like, I interest me, you know. Obviously Willie Mays, undoubtedly all time great. One of the 5 best players to ever play the game. Unquestionable, right? Like unassailable resume. Everyone knows, who cares about baseball knows and has seen the catch. But you know, all the different little minutiae about him and his career was something that I just, you know, was unaware of because of the lack of availability of material. And so to, you know, be able to hear that not only from a variety of different, African American baseball historians, but, you know, to hear it from the man himself was awesome, remarkable, and incredibly worth it.
Yeah, I mean, this is someone who, I mean, still with us, but there hasn't like he's been a much more private famous figure than a lot of other baseball players. And in fact, I
Yes.
happened to listen to so the director of this documentary, Nelson George, and one of the producers, Colin Hanks, were on Joe Posnanski's podcast,
The podcast.
the Poscast, and they were talking. And so Posnanski's co-host is Michael Schur from the writer of The Office and Parks and
Right.
Rec, and played what was
He's
the
Moe's, I
cousin,
think.
Mose Schrute, yeah, the cousin with the weird kind of chin strap beard. So he the point he raised was, Joe DiMaggio, like throughout his like post-playing career, was always introduced as the greatest living baseball player. and
Yeah, and he wasn't even the greatest living Yankee.
And that's and so this is, I mean, obviously, like Schur is a lifelong Red Sox fan, so he takes offense to anything
Sure, of
Yankee
course.
does. But what he said was, the telling thing was Willie Mays never had to get people to refer to him as that. Like he
No,
that was
everyone just
not
knew.
it was just unassailable, like based on his performance. And the fact that essentially like the notion of a five-tool player
It was him.
was
He was
him.
the
Like
first
they
one.
That was where they came up with it.
I mean, like you could, yeah. I mean, he was probably the first one, right? Like, or the, I mean, obviously not the first one, but he was the first one that was widely referred to as that.
Yeah, I think like whether someone had evaluated someone as a five-tool player be before that point,
Like, I'm sure
probably
Jackie Robinson
some
could
scout
be,
kind of
you
like
know.
determined that, but the fact that like it was he was described as a five-tool player, and it
Yeah.
became kind of common parlance.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting, and to hear all about his time in New York too, and like the thought process about going and get like getting Negro League players because they were falling behind was another interesting thing as well, right? Like the Dodgers were scooping up. So I think a lot of times people forget, and I often do too, that there was like it's like five New York teams at like a given point in time, right? Like you had the Yankees, the Mets, the not the Mets came in later, but
The
still
Mets
like
were later. Yeah, the Mets was
the Yankees and the
60.
Dodgers and the Giants were all playing there. Plus there was like a couple Negro League teams that played it in and around there too, right? And so like it was kind of wild that there was all these New York teams that were battling out for talent because it was kind of still the Wild West at that point in time in terms of talent. And especially with integrating African American players into the game. And it was interesting to hear the story about how they felt they were really falling behind and went out and got a whole swath of really great players, including Willie Mays, who was terrible at the start, but then, you know, obviously
Well, because he
turned
was
it
still
around.
a teenager, right? Like he didn't have a lot of experience
Yeah, I think
in,
he was 19 when he signed with the Giants.
yeah, because he had I think only had like a year and a half in the Negro Leagues.
He started playing there when he was 16, so he might have even been 18.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the specific details, but like I know that they kind of talked about like he did not have the seasoning, and like as the st story's been told, like Jackie was chosen by Rancho Ricky because of, his experience, as a college athlete, as player in the Negro Leagues, that like he was an adult. Whereas I would say Willie, when he got signed, was a young man. He was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, if it hadn't happened by that point, I think that Mays probably would have been a good candidate too, just because of his very private nature and his very calm demeanor.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Willie Mays. I'm just meaning
No,
he was
I'm not.
younger. He was
Yes, yeah,
less
absolutely.
mature.
One thing that absolutely stunned and shocked me was, like, in my mind, San Francisco's always been a progressive city for a number of
Yes.
different reasons. And hearing about like all of the racial abuse and discrimination that he suffered when they moved to San Francisco was stunning to me. I had no idea, right? Like finding out that like Willie Mays, right? Like at the time, maybe the second or third most famous baseball player on the planet, you know, probably the best baseball player on the planet at the time, was wanted to buy a house in an affluent neighborhood, certainly had the money to do so. And when the seller found out that it was an African-American, took the house off the market. Like, and more stuff, you know, in terms of that nature was just, it was eye-opening to me.
Yeah, I think in part because he had been a much quieter and less vocal figure in the Black civil rights period. It was surprising to learn that he'd faced this and he, like he had kind of battled back against it just in a much less broadcast way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he was so quiet and private, like it wasn't really, he didn't broadcast it. He didn't make it known to people what he was kind of going through, unlike, you know, a myriad of other talents. And obviously like, but the East Coast bias does exist. And I'm sure that like news from the West Coast wasn't making its way to a majority East Coast baseball journalism.
Yeah. Group. 'Cause they do show like whatever the like CBS affiliate in, like they show footage from the, like an interview that he did with the whatever, like kind of nightly news program they had in San Francisco. But yeah, like whether that ever got shown outside of, you know, the transmitter within the Bay Area, I don't know. You know, like was this a story that was well known? I don't know for sure, but certainly I had heard about Jackie writing to Willie saying like you need to use your status and speak up more for Black players.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you've got the Latin and you know, colored players from other countries talking about kind of the role he played. You've got Juan Marichal, you've got others who talk about his being a leader in the clubhouse and in their lives. And it certainly maybe at least kind of like pushes back against kind of the narrative about Willie and
being, yeah, I mean, he wasn't
a private fighter, but
he wasn't outspoken in the way that I think a lot of people were, but like he definitely fought. And that's something that the doc, you know, really, really showcases. And I do think it's cool, like the bond that he has with those Latin players, right? Like they all talk about him with such reverence, and to know that he kind of stood up and fought for them too, at a time when they were, you know, going through the same sort of troubles and tribulations that African-American players were going through, you know, 10 years ago is something that was inspiring too. Like Willie Mays just seems like a cool hang, you know, like he just seems like a good dude and a cool hang and like a good human being. And I think that was tough to say about a lot of baseball players at the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Did you watch as the credits rolled, the like kind of clip of the producer and director talking to him kind of like,
yes,
not necessarily. So you saw the handshake.
Yes.
So at the end of the movie, and this isn't like spoiling anything, but like Willie Mays is in, I think he's 90, 91.
He's very old.
And
yes, 91 and 6 months. So whatever, 91 and a half.
Yeah. And he's shaking hands with, I'm not sure if it was the director, the producer, but like calls the person out on, he's like, you call that a handshake, and basically like,
yeah,
crushes their hand. And so I was listening to the director on the podcast, and he's like, yeah, this guy, he's like, it's not just that, it's like his hand looks like it's a baseball mitt.
It's massive.
He's got these massive hands and these forearms, and the guy is not like, you know, he's obviously lost some of his hearing and his vision, but in terms of like his physicality, he's still a presence, and he is like strong as heck.
Which is wild considering that, you know, he was never like considered a big guy and wouldn't necessarily be considered a big guy now. He's five, like in his playing days was only like 5'11", 180.
Yeah. Very lean. And
has certainly gotten smaller as he has gotten older. like, and just how remarkable of a baseball player he was. Like, he had a 22 year career, 22 years in the major leagues, and never once put up a negative wins above replacement. Not once. And only once in his entire career, his last season with the Mets, where he only played 66 games, did he fail to eclipse one win above replacement. like a 42-year-old man at the time, and still like well above replacement level player.
Yeah, still a contributor, right? Yeah. Like they, as you know, if you go on Baseball Reference and look up his stats from that year, and the Mets were contenders, and he was part of the reason.
Didn't hit well, but found other ways to be a contributor. Got on base a remarkable amount, and still was a plus defender. Like at 42, still a plus defender at 42. Just, man, like I could wax about Willie never endingly. I'm so thrilled and happy that I watched this documentary, and I've only dived further down the rabbit hole about him. And I think more people need to be talking about him.
So the thing that coming away from it, yes, absolutely recommend this documentary for folks. Strongly recommend seeking it out. The thing that I did not anticipate, like I was like, oh, this will be exciting to watch. First of all, that he's being interviewed and talking, and then, you know, hear some other people speak on him, talk about, you know, the impact that Leo DeRoche had on him.
Yes.
Some very interesting kind of like tidbits about like his early years. But the thing I did not anticipate coming away from was reconsidering Barry Bonds.
Yep, same. I texted that to you too as well. I was like, I am reconsidering my opinion on Barry Bonds, the human being. Barry Bonds, the player, was never, his case was never assailable in my opinion, but Barry Bonds, the human being, came across charming, well-spoken, kind, thoughtful. And I was not expecting that considering like his tenuous relationship with the media in San Francisco during most of his playing career.
Mm-hmm.
But man, like and the way he talked about race, you know, the way he talked about reverentially about Willie, who I think is his godfather.
Yeah.
Right?
So Bobby Bonds, Barry Bonds' father, was kind of taken under Willie Mays' wings as a player. And then became like, so I mean, because Barry was basically a like toddler when Willie first kind of like became a significant force in Bobby's life, and yeah, that he's his godfather, and that, you know, when Bobby passed away, that Willie really did become a surrogate father to him.
Yeah.
And he, like, Barry talks about this in his interview portions in the documentary. And I'd forgotten this, but that at Barry Bonds' retirement ceremony, or rather his like kind of like number retirement in San Francisco, that Willie Mays hadn't been, you know, planning to speak, but demanded the mic and spent several minutes, and they show the entire speech in this documentary, cajoling the Baseball Writers Association of America for not voting Barry Bonds into the Hall of Fame. That basically like making a case for Bonds in this thing, and the relationship between these two, and the respect that Mays has for Bonds the player, and that both of them have for each other as men, was like really like kind of like the eye-opening part of this documentary for me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that too, right? And it makes me think, like, Mays is obviously an incredibly insightful, thoughtful human being, and if he, you know, he's obviously seen a side of Barry that like other people haven't. And like knowing the potential racial component that exists in San Francisco, it does feel like, you know, maybe his clash with the media there was, you know, instigated on a number of different factors. And I'd never thought that Barry deserved to be out of the Hall of Fame, but I think that there should be more investigation into it, I think, by a lot of people, especially considering like his attitude towards the media. I don't know. I came out having a much higher opinion of Barry Bonds than I thought I was going to going into a Willie Mays documentary.
Yeah, I certainly, like, you know, growing up knowing, you know, I watched him when he was in Pittsburgh still, like before he ended up in San Francisco, and he was a phenomenal player. And as we've talked about, you know, his career trajectory suggested Hall of Fame even before there was any insinuation that he was, you know, taking something he shouldn't be taking. That his statistically, he was a fantastic player. He obviously got better, but he was playing against a lot of people who were also using. So whether you put an asterisk behind it or whatever, he's still the person with the records. He's still the person with this history. And I did kind of come away from this thinking, oh, you know what? Maybe even I've been a little reluctant to recognize this player's greatness because of kind of the way that he's been covered. And that era has really kind of like tarnished my opinion of, I mean, you know how I feel about like Bud Selig, like that era. I like, it's just all the Bud stink has gotten on everyone.
There's a lot of Bud stink.
Yeah. So I seeing him and being unprepared for seeing him in this context actually like forced me to reckon with it a little bit.
Yeah. And like, since watching the documentary, I've gone back and kind of done more research on, you know, like news film basically, right? Like ticker tape stuff, you know, what articles were being written at the time by the people who were living it. And it definitely feels as if Barry Bonds was offended by the Baseball Writers Association of America not giving him MVP in the year that McGuire won it, when Bonds was the superior player based solely on the narrative that, you know, McGuire hit all of those home runs and was like really offended by that. And then was like, okay, well, if you guys aren't going to, if home runs is what it's going to take for me to win an MVP, then fine. I'm going to do this because everyone else is, but I'm going to do it better than everybody else because I am better than everybody else. And I'm not going to say that was the right thing to do, but I aspire to be that amount of petty.
fueled by the haters.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Like I can understand that, right? Like if you are really incredibly good at your job, possibly the best to do your job at the time. Well, not possibly, definitely the best to do your job, that job at the time, but potentially the best of all time to have ever done the job. And, you know, the ones who are making the decisions about who wins, you know, awards for that sort of thing, just ignore you because not some guy, but another very good baseball player cheats. And everyone knows he cheated or whatever, not cheated, but abused some things. Because again, like I am a Mark McGuire apologist, but I don't want to skirt around the fact that he did some stuff. And if I can see where Barry's mindset's coming from, I guess is where I want to get to with this rambling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is understandable that Lord knows we've celebrated other players who've been fueled by similar sentiments, so
yeah, of course
it's worth considering.
A little time for hot stove.
It's I mean, obviously with the you know, off season, it's a good time to watch things like that. I was just trying to pull it up. I don't know if you've seen, there's a kind of thing about kind of the last chance for some Cuban ball players.
I haven't seen that yet, but I have currently been on a very large documentary binge lately, or I guess even like video essays in some way, shape or form. So if there's good documentaries, please alert me to them because I've just been binge watching documentaries lately. So of all shapes and forms.
It's called The Last Out is the MLB doc about these Cuban ball players. I'm hoping maybe as we kind of head towards the winter months that maybe we pick a few things that we watch, we give folks the heads up on,
I
and
love that.
encourage them to kind of the way we did with our
Book club.
book club, and when we were doing the movies, the rewatches of Moneyball and Major League and things like that, back when there was no baseball in spring 2020. So that's certainly something on the horizon. Yeah, but in the meantime, Say Hey Willie Mays, if you've got Crave, and like Brian said, on a few other platforms as well, encourage people to check it out.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of the better baseball documentaries I've seen.
And Jeffrey Wright narrates it, and I always love Jeffrey Wright. So wonderful. Well, with that, stick around. What's on the pity party this afternoon?
I've got a whole variety of really good stuff. A little more depressive, I guess, in general today, but some Minerals, some Dashboard Confessional, the Return of the Jazz June. I haven't played them in quite a long time. Some Balance and Composure, the Wet Bandits, because I watched Home Alone and remembered that they were a band. Jail Socks, Golfer, Woven in Hiatus, just like a lot of really good stuff.
All right. Well, that's at 1 p.m. this afternoon. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM, and we will be back on the Bench Jockeys another week.
Strike three, you're out.